As most U.S. citizens stand transfixed in horror over the onslaught of shootings and slayings in this country, in places such as Buffalo, NY and Uvalde, Uvalde, Texas, one has to wonder what the heck is going on. To arrive at a greater understanding of precisely what is happening in the land of the free and home of the brave, I propose we look at three scenarios to get some type of perspective on what is occurring in this society. Scenario 1. All of these mass shootings are random events that are just happening spontaneously with no rhyme or reason, assaulting our collective sense of safety, security, and personal well-being. Scenario 2. These incidents are organized attempts by groups and/or individuals whose goal is to create an atmosphere of fear and unrest in this country to further their political or social agendas in an environment of frenzy and helter-slash-skelter. Helter-slash-skelter was a term popularized by convicted murderer and cult leader Charles Manson, who advocated this tactic of confusion in order to foment a race war between black and white peoples, forcing a resolution via the ultimate final solution. The term was also the name of an old Beatles tune. Proponents of this way of thinking include generic white supremacists, certain segments of the American Nazi Party, individual Ku Klux Klan claverns, various militia and paramilitary groups, the more rabid members of the conservative Christian right, politicized white evangelicals, the Proud Boys, oath keepers, and crazed nutjobs who are in it to raise hell and disrupt the social fabric of the country. Scenario 3. This is a plan by some government agencies and officials to take over the country by allowing these chaotic events to escalate unabated and unchallenged with a laissez-faire attitude. This is also a tactic of rogue elements in the American political firmament, such as the Trump White House, the Tea Party alumni, and the shadow industrialists. These are people like the Koch brothers, Rupert Murdoch and his Fox News empire. They are willing to let things get so bad, people will be calling for any solution to stop the chaos, even to the point of surrendering individual freedoms and constitutional rights for the sake of order. They are also willing to nudge the process along by creating inflammatory situations that explode in a flashpoint, which leads to improbable and unwinnable situations, which they milk the benefit from. They will also have sleeper agents in play as their mind-controlled minions. See the movie The Manchurian Candidate as a cultural touchstone for this tactic. See both the Frank Sinatra version and the Denzel Washington version of the same-titled film. In addition, see the entire Purge collection of movies, which gives you the direct blueprint of how these forces of disruption move the country from a place of laws and rights, with nominal democracy, to a fascist totalitarian government. Scenario 4. This is an additional bonus, one stating it is all in line with Bible prophecy, and the things that we are witnessing today are the details that line up with the broad strokes of biblical prophecy. So we have several options. Which one is most likely viable? Upon close examination of all the available scenarios, all have elements that support, contradict, and fit each other based upon what we see transpiring in the United States today. Let's look at Scenario 1. The so-called randomness of all these slayings/shootings. Of all of our scenarios, this one is the most unlikely due to the timing and frequency of these assaults. The shootings in Buffalo were clearly racially motivated. The shootings in Uvalde or Uvalde, depending on who you ask, Texas, while horrific and tragic, the motivations are less clear, with the shooter being Latino, along with the victims, mainly 10-year-old children. The effects in both instances remain the same. Abject terror and a sense of instability in people's lives. A couple of anomalous facts should be considered in both cases. In Uvalde, Texas, the shooter was a poor, disaffected Latino male. He, of course, was killed at the scene by law enforcement. It is said that he was uneducated, unemployed, and mentally troubled with no income. So how does he pull up in a brand new pickup truck with state-of-the-art AR-15 automatic weapons, three of them, with no discernible income for any of these kinds of items? Secondly, why did it take the police an hour to engage the shooter, while just waiting outside the area while children are dying? What intel or theories did they have on this suspect that made them wait until the time they finally did engage the shooter until death? In Buffalo, it was revealed that one of the victims, a security guard named Aaron Salter Jr., had a patent pending for an invention he developed that would make cars run on water. Have you checked the price of gasoline these days? In some places, it is over $5 a gallon. Can you picture a mechanism that could make engines run on water? 3/4 of the earth is water. The instant collapse of the oil industry would be imminent and immediate. The primary cause of air pollution and global warming would be eliminated, or at least greatly diminished. You don't think in the fractured and toxic political climate we exist in that a corporate oil entity like Shell, BP, or ExxonMobil would not seize on an opportunity to eliminate a potential threat to their profit-gouging greed? Ordering a hit under the guise of a racially motivated massacre is the perfect cover for plausible deniability, and in the corporate mind, set, any collateral damage of people is considered acceptable losses. In fact, it would be then the perfect cover for such an act. Case in point is one of earlier random mass shootings in the U.S. when this was still a rare occurrence, and not a shooting of the day or the week. I am speaking of the so-called D.C. sniper team of John Allen Muhammad and Lee Malvo. Being one of the early mass shooting dramas in American psycho reality, this D.C. sniper tableau was truly frightening and had the DMV, D.C./Maryland/Virginia, paralyzed with fear because they were striking victims from any and everywhere. Gas stations, off the side of the road, from a blue van, then a white van, the actual station wagon, in D.C., Maryland, Virginia, they were appearing everywhere. While it appeared like the D.C. sniper team's victims were random and without regard for any particular race or demographic profile, in fact, if you look at their victims list, they were actually pretty egalitarian in regards to their marks. Black, white, Indian, Hispanic, no one was exempt from the wrath of the D.C. snipers. One victim stood out. His name was Ken Bridges. He was a black man who had put together a framework for economic development in the black community which would have had a significant positive impact on a segment of the U.S. public that has suffered under benign neglect and outright terroristic attacks for decades, more accurately for centuries. Bridges had already started putting the necessary mechanisms in place to get his vision into operational action, and all of a sudden he is one of the D.C. sniper team's random victims. With a potential paradigm shift that could alter the trajectory of African American people's dismal economic plight, and all of a sudden this man just happens to come in the crosshairs of the DC sniper team. An astronomical coincidence. An unfathomable misfortune. Don't believe the hype. Anything that sounds and seems that far-fetched, you best believe it is. The shootings in the Beltway were a sensational distraction to shift from the true target, Ken Bridges, whose plan and vision was probably deemed by certain elements in this government a threat to national security. It is the catch-all cover phrase used when no justification can be used for unsavory actions against citizens of this country. What you have here is a collapsing and intersecting of the various scenarios. When the mass shootings initially began in earnest in places like Columbine, Colorado, and Sandy Hook, Connecticut, those shootings were done by incel, alienated teenagers who were loners that had some personal connection and direct history with their primary targets. These earlier school mass shootings set a precedent for subsequent and copycat shootings that have transpired since that time. It also provided a template and blueprint for ruthless and despicable players to enact their agendas by weaponizing these tragic events for social and political ends. This is where the convergence of scenarios begins to occur. Various government black ops groups use this carnage in American society as an opportunity to take out targets that did not correspond with their vision of what U.S. society should be or look like. The goal was to use this new societal chaos as a tactic for a new form of assassination. It could be used anywhere without arising any undue attention of any one person being singled out for elimination. It was chaotic, tragic, grief-inducing, and could be used anywhere with acceptable collateral damage. One reason for adopting mass shootings as an assassination tool by the murky U.S. alphabet soup shadow agencies is that people had gotten wise to their proven method of assassination. Airplane crashes, pilot error, or catastrophic equipment failure. This method of assassination had been in use for at least a decade or more, starting in the early 1980s, all the way to the early 2000s. Some of the casualties of these air disasters are as follows: Congressman Mickey Leland of Texas, John Tower, former CIA head, Senator John Hines of Pennsylvania and heir the Hines ketchup fortune, the Minnesota senator and his wife, DNC Chair Ron Brown, who at that time was appointed Secretary of Commerce, and was on his way to conference in Africa with some of the brightest minds in finance, economics, fiscal policy in the USA. All of them happened to be black. More accurately, all of them were black on purpose due to Brown's original mission objective to establish meaningful economic ties with Africans and African Americans. Brown's plane also went down, with all passengers on board killed. It must be noted that when a recovery and forensic team, NTSB, National Travel Safety Board, uncovered the wreckage of his aircraft, they found his body with a bullet wound through his head, execution style. None of the other bodies were found like that. Only his. With that revelation, the information discovered by the NTSB investigation, there was a concerted effort by government entities to conceal and repress the data about a gunshot wound to the head for Secretary Brown in the midst of a tragic airplane crash. The suppression was largely successful due to the potential scandal and the obvious horrible optics for the Clinton White House, if it came out that in a terrible plane crash full of some of the most talented African American people in the world of economics and finance, the engineer of this historic event was revealed to have a bullet in the brain in the midst of said plane crash. This is significant because the Clinton White House had already endured the Monica Gates scandal and missed a metaphorical bullet in an impeachment trial that basically tried him, William Jefferson Clinton, for lying to Congress and being unfit for office, while having Monica Lewinsky perform fellatio on him in the Oval Office. Had his White House been implicated 4 inches, the murder of a group of successful black business people under the guise of an air disaster and a probable assassination on a potential political rival, even in the political and social climate of the late 90s, he would have been convicted, formally impeached and sent to prison, or some elaborate house arrest, because it is certain some compromise would have been reached to save the sanctity of the office of the president. An important side note and observation. As head of the DNC, Ron Brown was the man responsible for orchestrating the strategy that resulted in the election of Bill Clinton as President of the United States. Brown was a successful businessman and political strategist. At the time, you had the first George Bush riding high on the first Desert Storm War, a resounding victory, and the Democrats didn't think they had a chance in hell of getting the White House against an incumbent president who had a resounding victory in a war that restored America's global swagger. Ron Brown said to Clinton and the rest of the conservative Democratic National Committee, the so-called Blue Dog Democrats, that if they made him chairman of the DNC, he would get them in the White House. They accepted his offer, and Bill Clinton, against all odds, became president of the U.S. What this clearly shows is that Ron Brown created Bill Clinton, a scandal-plagued governor from one of the poorest and backward states in the Union, Arkansas, and elevated him to the presidency, with a brilliant campaign that unseated a popular victorious wartime president. As black folk are known to say, he made something out of nothing. It would stand to reason that while Clinton might have been temporarily grateful, being a political animal, he knew that Brown would be a formidable political adversary at some point. It is worth some speculation that had Ron Brown not perished in that airplane disaster, it is highly possible that he would have become the first African American, black, president of the United States, and not the now mostly celebrated Barack Hussein Obama.